Let's start here. Robert Mays is joining us, the host of the Athletic Football Show and NFL writer with the Athletic. Robert, like, I don't think there's any way we can match what we saw last weekend, but what's sort of the best case scenario we see this weekend that at least we don't feel, you know, the bends in terms of the quality in weekends?
Sorry, one more time.
Okay, last weekend, incredible playoffs. And I don't expect this weekend to be as good, but what needs to happen in the AFC-NFC championship game where, at the very least, we can feel that we got an entertainment product nearly as good as what we got last weekend?
Oh, I think the NFC championship game, as is, if we see round three of the games that we've seen from these teams in the past over the last couple of years, I mean, I feel like they play each other very close. Obviously, the familiarity adds a layer of intrigue there. I'm not worried about that one. I think that the only game that could get out, I mean, they could always get out of hand, but if you just look at it, I think the game more likely to get out of hand would be the AFC game, just because the Bengals, top to bottom, their roster is not as good as the Chiefs' roster is. And you know, we've seen them beat the Chiefs recently, but it's kind of a fluky game. A lot of things happen at the end, penalties, et cetera. Had some big plays on the Bengals' side. So I think that's the recipe. You know, if the Bengals can continue to find some big plays down the field, if they can kind of trade punches with the Chiefs' offense, then I think we could see two really good games again. But if the Bengals struggle in pass protection, let's put it this way. If the Bengals score 16 points through the first 3.5 quarters against the Chiefs, that game has a chance of getting out of hand.
And then on that one, the other thing that makes me nervous, it's not just that Burrow got sacked 9 times by the Titans last week. It's that 8 of them came with just a 4-man rush. And I know the Titans have talent there and they got that great defensive tackle, but 8 sacks with a 4-man rush, that makes me nervous.
Yeah, the Titans do a really good job of kind of playing with your pass protection rules, because those 4 guys are coming from a lot of different places. You know, they'll drop Harold Landry all the time. They'll bring a defensive back coming off the edge. A lot of twists and stunts involved in that. And I'm sure the Chiefs looked at that and will pick up on it. You know, they'll say they struggle even when bringing 4, when the 4 are coming from some unpredictable places. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some simulated pressures from the Chiefs and, you know, some creative ways to make them think that you're coming and bringing extra bodies, but not. So, you know, I think that is absolutely the area where you have to be worried about the Bengals. So their offensive line is one of the lesser groups in the entire league. And it's a testament to what Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and those skill position players have been up to this point, that they've even made it this far.
And that's why I hope that game isn't a blowout. Like, when I put my notes together for this game, it might not be my number one, but my number two is I want to see cocky/confident Joe Burrow. And I don't mean cocky in a bad way. His talking points about how, like, this is what they expect. This is the new norm. And we saw what he did last time against Kansas City, and he's been steady, sometimes spectacular in the playoffs. And I want to see Max Burrow against that defense.
I don't think you have to worry about his confidence level. I think that's something that's going to be pretty steady from here on out. And I'm excited to see it. I mean, you know, he's just somebody who's become really must-see TV. You know, he's one of those quarterbacks that you make a point that you're going to from here on out. Obviously, everyone's going to watch this game, but even in the next year, I think he's just one of those guys that you make a point to carve out some time in your day to watch him. And that's really the biggest compliment I can give somebody. It's making me stop in my tracks and say, I want to see what this guy does in this moment. He's definitely reached that point.
Yeah, you know, it's been a while for that for the Bengals. Even when they were winning with Andy Dalton, no one ever said, hey, Andy Dalton's on. Everyone shut up. I want to watch what he does here. Maybe like half a year when Jeff Blake was a quarterback for the Bengals and some of the Carson Palmer years, but it's been a long time. On one of your videos, you talked about, you gave praise for a group that doesn't usually get much, the Bengals defense. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners a little bit about the Bengals D, because, woof, they're going to be in on it. They're going to have to do something special this weekend.
Just a really solid group overall. You know, when they put that group together, I was concerned just because they don't have stars. And when you don't have true difference makers on that side of the ball, it can be tough. So when I was looking at the guys they signed this offseason, you think about Trey Hendrickson, and then Chidobe Awuzie, and then even going back into last offseason, guys like Von Bell, DJ Reader. Yeah, this is a defense built through free agency because the Bengals just haven't drafted very well at all. And it's really tough to build a good unit with those types of guys because you're overpaying for the most part. And again, true difference makers don't often hit free agency, but I've been so impressed at how this group has really played like more than the sum of its parts. You know, you have a secondary that's just full of really solid players. And Mike Hilton is another one of those free agents that came over from Pittsburgh. You saw what he did in that last game. Awuzie has been fantastic. Jesse Bates has made his share of plays in the playoffs, and that is a homegrown guy that they have. And up front, I mean, Reader was unbelievable, their defensive tackle against the Titans and against the run. And Hendrickson has really picked up where he left off last offseason, or last season with the Saints. I was worried that if he becomes a true number one rusher, you know, he's not the second, third option. He's a full-time player, which he wasn't all the time in New Orleans. Can he continue this sort of production? And the answer has been yes. So I think among all the units in the entire league this season, you know, they've probably been one of the more four or five surprising groups based on what my preseason expectations were from them and what they ended up being.
Yeah, no, and it's going to get overshadowed because we're obviously going to focus on the Chiefs' offense as we should and Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase, but it is a better group than I think people might realize. And they did a good job in that second half of that the Chiefs game near the end of the season. On the other side, on the NFC, I mean, obviously there's 100 questions, namely probably the health of half the 49ers. All of them look like they were hobbling at some point in that game against the Packers. But my question is do you think they'll be able to score enough? I mean, what happens if they don't get the block punt and block field goal again?
I think that their defense or their offense has really done a good job against the Rams over the last couple of years. Even last year, in 2020, when the Rams had the best defense in football, you know, they're just shutting people out left and right and making it really, really difficult. The Niners always found a way to move the ball. I think that Kyle Shanahan has done a very good job of understanding, even if we're not creating big explosive plays against this team, we can really manufacture methodical drives based on the way they play and based on our understanding of their rules. So that to me is a big advantage. I think the familiarity there that Kyle Shanahan has with the way the Rams play and how many times he's seen them, to me it's a little bit different than the challenge that the Packers presented last week. Also, it's not going to be sub-zero weather. The fact that you were playing in more normal conditions, that definitely played a part in the passing game struggles for the Niners, I would say, and the passing game struggles for the Packers as well. So I would expect a better output from Garoppolo and from that group this weekend than they had last weekend.
You're right. And they do have one extra day off because that game was on Saturday. And like anything, I'm just hoping all those players that were looking beat up are all healthy because we just want the best game out there. And as you mentioned, Robert, off the top, that game should be incredible, third time facing off against each other this year. On the podcast, and I apologize, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, been driving around today, but you talked to you, one of the topics of conversation was your biggest takeaways from the 2021 rookie class. I'm curious, I don't know if the best way to put it is what has been learned, but what can be learned of the quarterbacks of Fields and Lawrence, Wilson and Jones? I'll keep Trey Lance out of it. He hasn't played enough, but I don't know. Like, what lessons have you learned from those guys about who they might be?
I think the biggest lesson is a lesson we've learned a lot over the years. And this year isn't special, but I think it kind of hammered home some of these ideas. And it's that your support system as a quarterback is hugely important. And not only the players around you, but whatever team drafts you. And you look at the Patriots and their offensive system and what they put on their quarterback, just the amount of responsibilities and at the line of scrimmage and changing plays. I mean, it's a really good incubator for quarterback development, the way that they play. And I think that you saw that with Mac Jones and just how much control he had at the line of scrimmage at times and just his total understanding of the offense. I think that they empower their quarterbacks on the mental side in a way that is good for their development. And then just with the support system, New England has one of the best offensive lines in football when all those guys are healthy. Now, this is a team that was drafting in the middle of the first round last year, and even that was a little bit misleading because they lost more guys to COVID exemptions last season than any other team in the league. So this is a team that spent a lot of money in free agency, that was probably better than their 2020 record would have indicated, and you have a quarterback stepping into that situation, and then you have a quarterback going to Jacksonville with a first-year head coach, a staff that clearly was in over its head, and a support system that isn't very good. You know, a group of receivers that continuously ran into one another, that are playing out of position in terms of what roles you're asking them to fill. I mean, this is a team that really needed to lean on Jamal Agnew at times last season for speed in their secondary. Jamal Agnew is a career kick returner. I mean, he was wearing number 39. It's the fact that they had to tap into that is concerning. And you see that, and we know this, right? We know how important that is. But to see it so starkly this year with prospects like Trevor Lawrence, who we've been talking about for 5 years since he was in high school, it's just a reminder of that to me. And I still have some real faith in what Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields can become in the right circumstances. But I feel like those circumstances are what my biggest takeaway was from watching that group this year.
I noticed you didn't mention Zach Wilson. Is he, I guess the question sort of then is, who do you have the most faith in? And not them, but the organizations, the present talent, and the people who decide who to draft and who to bring in more talent.
And that's a great question. I mean, with Chicago, we're starting over, right? And
yeah.
You don't know. I mean, they're, what the plan is going to be is dependent on how Ryan Poles, their new GM, wants to build that organization and that roster. We still don't know who the coach is going to be. And the same goes for Jacksonville. You know, obviously they kept Trent Baalke, which I think is probably a mistake. I think if you could probably have a clean break there and just start over, it would have been the right move. They decided not to do that. So now you have the same front office that built that team is going to be responsible for building this team. And who knows who the coach is going to be. You know, if it ends up being Byron Leftwich, that's interesting to me. You know, this is a guy who obviously played in the NFL for a really long time. I feel like he's going to be a good kind of calming presence for a Trevor Lawrence, somebody that really is just a voice in the room. It's just an empathetic ear who understands this kind of stuff, and I think that does matter. And if he does bring that kind of Arians-based system to Jacksonville, I'm all for that. I mean, when you look at Trevor Lawrence and just his physical ability and the way that he can throw the football, that offense is so aggressive and so down the field and vertical. I think it's a decent match with his skill set. Now the question is, can we get some pass catchers in there? You know, can they really understand how to put together that group? Because, you know, I think Marvin Jones is a pretty good player. But outside of Marvin Jones, they have Laviska Shenault, whose role was totally muddled and difficult to understand. DJ Chark gets hurt. You know, they have to trade for Dan Arnold midway through the season to get a pass-catching tight end, even though they had all the money in the world to bolster that position in free agency and decided to completely bypass it inside, you know, Chris Manhurst as a blocker, but no one to catch the football. It's just the lack of cohesion and vision and the way that they built that thing, I think, was really obvious. And we'll see what happens on the coaching side. If it's Leftwich, I have faith. But in terms of the guys picking the players, it's harder to be enthusiastic about that based on what we've seen.
Yeah, they certainly don't deserve. The benefit of the doubt is hard to do with Jacksonville. Hey, Robert, as I let you go, I was wondering if you just tell everyone where they can find your work, the writing, and, of course, the podcast.
The podcast is every day. The Athletic Football Show, we do it 5 days a week. So please come check it out. Today we had our draft show with Lance Zierlein and Dane Brugler, who do it every single Wednesday. They do a fantastic job. We broke down some of our lessons from the 2020 draft, and they talked to Jim Nagy, who runs the Senior Bowl. We had a reaction to the Sean Payton retirement yesterday with our Saints writer Kat Terrell and Lindsey Jones, because I was on a plane. And I'll talk to Lindsey tomorrow. We'll just run through all of the coaching news, you know, the GM hires in Chicago and Minnesota, where kind of these searches stand. And, that's really it. So every day we got a little bit of a different flavor, and, you know, hopefully people will come check it out.
Fair to say the Giants are in a better place because they no longer have Gettleman?
Oh, I definitely think so.
Okay.
And then now it's the question of what they want this to look like. You know, Joe Shane was part of a pretty significant teardown in Buffalo, and, you know, a pretty significant teardown of an expensive roster. You know, he actually has a pretty appropriate background and experience, so level of experience to deal with what the Giants are going to have to do, because this is an expensive team that was one of the worst teams in football last year. So they're in a pretty big hole. They've got some nice draft capital, but it's going to be a challenge for him. But I think that his past experience in Buffalo is going to set him up well to deal with that.
It's always good when you're in the worst teams and you're at the cap limit. That's delightful. Follow the man on Twitter at Robert Mays. Check out the Athletic Football Show podcast. All the best, Robert. Thank you so much for joining the show today.
Appreciate it, guys.
Take care. Robert Mays from The Athletic.